and welcome to episode 2 of You, Me and Web3, a podcast sponsored by the Web3 tech company Forge. Before we do get into today's episode though, a huge thank you to everybody who listened to episode 1 and our short special last week, and if you haven't had a chance yet, do go and check them out. As a quick reminder as well, You, Me and Web3 is a podcast where we talk to Web3 industry leaders, breaking down all the complexities so that even I can grasp what's going on. My name is Tom McDermott, and on this episode, we're delighted to be joined by Matt Howells-Barbie. Matt is the CMO at Decentral Games and a very well-respected voice in the GameFi sector, but that only tells half the story, doesn't it, Matt? So perhaps you can give the listener a quick whistle-stop tour of your career to date, just to get us started, please.
Well, my path has not necessarily been the more traditional one of those working in Web3. I spent best part of a decade in the software as a service space at HubSpot. I was VP of marketing over there and joined when the company was pretty small. We just went public, and yeah, 7 years later, I decided, all right, I'm kind of burnt out with the pandemic a little bit, want to try something new. And I'd been very much involved in the crypto space for quite a while, and knew I wanted to jump in there. So it was a question of kind of where, and less so than when. And really, I kind of started getting a lot more actively involved in crypto in 2017. I'd been interested, and I'd actually done bits of crypto mining, of Litecoin actually, prior to that. But to be completely honest, I'd love to say that I was like really got the whole ethos of crypto back in like 2015 and prior to that. But it was kind of just more, I was interested in just how this is all working with kind of scaling graphics cards and how everything was working on the technical side. And then I think 2017 started happening, and especially as I started hearing a lot more about Ethereum, a few things clicked for me, especially when it came to smart contracts. And I was like, okay, something big is happening here. And then all of a sudden came the ICO boom, and it was just chaos. And I was in Boston at the time, and my wife was working at MIT. So I spent quite a lot of time going and getting access to a lot of the talks. Like the MIT Bitcoin Club was incredible for hosting great talks. And there was a huge amount of tech and innovation coming out of in and around the Boston area, actually, on the blockchain side. There was a lot of those 2017 cohorts of companies that kind of started out there. So, and co-founder of HubSpot, Dharmesh, good friend of mine, he was an early investor in Coinbase, early adopter of Bitcoin. There's always people around me that we were able to talk a lot through. And that's when I launched a podcast with then at the time a colleague of mine at HubSpot, Austin, who's now at Block. And yeah, we've been running the podcast ever since, been doing advisory investing. And then as kind of I took a month out in October of last year, and on part was spend a little bit more time with my at the time 1.5 year old daughter, and then also to just kind of have a little bit of time to think through really what I wanted to do. And I'd been really bitten by the DeFi bug over the prior couple of years, especially since DeFi summer in 2020. And thought, you know, I really want to jump into an exciting project with a cool team and explore a whole new field, new challenges, get back into kind of the more scrappy building mode, but also kind of scratch the itch of the economic side of things as well. And where I landed was doing a bit of advisory with a company called Decentral Games, Web3 gaming company, and they kind of exploded near the end of last year and decided after a bit of advisory work, you know what, I'm gonna go all in here. I'm gonna move kind of a lot of my life into Web3 and really decide, is this the space that I want to be in long term? And yeah, 1 year pretty much in, and haven't looked back since.
Enjoying it, of course.
Yeah, loving it. You know, it's It's obviously 2022 has been nothing short of a shit show from an industry perspective. But I think this has been quite formative of an experience to go through this. I've been through bad times as an investor, right? I've been through the previous cycle. 2018, 2019 was just like peak pain, we thought. And then 2022 came along, right? And I think that's really cemented into me where some of the fundamentals are within the space, some of the things that aren't going away, and areas which, yeah, maybe we're just caught up completely in the hype cycle. So it's been a very good learning experience, and has been probably the most intellectually stimulated I've been since the very, very early days of HubSpot, actually, which was coincidentally in the beginning of the SaaS boom as well. So,
does that mean then, Matt, you might have one or two crazy Web3 stories you can share with us?
I honestly don't really know where to start here.
It sounds like the start of another podcast for you and I, perhaps.
Yeah, confessions of a Web3. So, like, you know, when I moved into the Web3 space, especially from within, yeah, what is a senior leadership role in a public company, pretty stable, in a time where the canary in the coal mines was dying of the broader economy. The Russian war had kicked off. The inflation was starting to run away. And then I moved into the crypto space. A lot of people around me was kind of saying, like, you know, are you actually crazy? And I actually wanted to join the industry during a bear market and get out of kind of the hype cycle, at least the beginning of bear market, to kind of cut through some of that. But some of the differences which I faced from, yeah, running like big teams, speaking to investors that are like public stockholders, and kind of every day speaking to a board, to going into chatting with people where, you know, I was like advising around a few different companies, seeing what was going to be a good fit. I would hop onto calls, and some people would be using like voice mods on their Zoom calls, and like I'd be speaking to like someone that sounded like Darth Vader. And, you know, I even at Decentral Games, where we didn't really have that, I was chatting to a lot of the leadership team, and I was like, okay, this is really interesting. It's a cool team. And they were like, oh, you should really meet with our director of operations. They're great, and you'll really like speaking to them. I was like, great, what's their name? They were like, it's Spicy Prawn. I was like, okay, this is a bit different. And Spicy Prawn is a great guy. And, you know, it is very different. And then when I came in and I got used to a lot of kind of the more, I guess, not so corporate culture that I came from, you realize that the reasons behind some of it, but then also getting into working in the space was when I started to see, in particular with centralized exchanges, how chaotic it could be and where the craziness really would happen. The kind of things that happen through Telegram blow my mind.
You're gonna have to tell me then. You can't reveal that and then leave me hanging.
So, like, you know, we would be working with a lot of major centralized exchanges. Let's just say, without naming them, some of the largest in the world. Let's just say, and you know, we will have our native token listed on many of these centralized exchanges, and from time to time, we'll need to, for example, send over large quantities of our token just to top up liquidity in the order books, as one small example of this, right? And this can mean sending anywhere between high six and seven figures of your token.
Okay.
And you think, okay, right, there's going to be a lot of paperwork here. We're going to have to work with their like compliance team, go jump through a load of calls. No, you will get a message on Telegram from someone that may also be operating under a pseudonym, which has happened many times, that works for these major crypto exchanges, and they will paste in an Ethereum wallet address that you then need to send those seven figures to. And it is unbelievable to me how all of this operates. Like the just the craziness and the chaos of it. We would work with listing teams to be trying to get listed in other major exchanges and continuously have to form new relationships because those listing teams would be fired for insider trading on like a 3-monthly cycle. So, you know, it's very chaotic. So, you know, when all of the FTX stuff started happening, yeah, it was surprising at the scale, but not surprising to me the lack of infrastructure and operations, accounting, stuff like that they had in place, because yeah, I've worked with a lot of these exchanges, and it's just rife for I'm not going to necessarily imply that there is corruption, but let's just say it'd be very, very easy to corrupt. And yeah, very different from when yeah, it's bizarre. You know, one of the things I'm very much in favor of, despite the popular opinion on crypto Twitter, is more regulation. Of course, the right kind of regulation, but there's too many pockets within the space that operate like a Wild West. So yeah, I'll leave that there.
Wow, really interesting. Thank you for that. Let's talk about Decentral Games then. What is it you're trying to do?
Well, you know, we're a Web3 gaming studio, and our goal is, of course, we want to drive people into our game. Our game is a free-to-play poker game, kind of like Zynga Poker in the regular kind of freemium world. And but it's in the metaverse. We account for about 60% of all traffic inside Decentraland, which is the largest open metaverse available right now. And our goal really, though, is about onboarding, you know, the next million plus players into Web3 gaming. And I think that's, and I wouldn't even say that's the long-term goal. I think that is the medium-term goal, is getting to that level. And there's a lot of work that needs to come there along that way. And I think in terms of Web3 gaming, we're definitely one of the larger games in the space, but it pales into insignificance when you compare that to kind of traditional gaming or gaming across other non-Web3 mediums. So that's our big focus. We want to get more people excited about Web3 gaming, and start to be a driving force in onboarding them into what is still a very nascent emerging space.
It's a pretty vast space, though, isn't it? How do you think you're going to add value to the gaming world?
So there's a few layers here, and I think when I put this in the context of like what's the appeal for Decentral Games in particular, in this context, because I think I can talk about it more broader, but you know, what we're doing is we're taking a game many people know and love, poker, and we're offering a new dimension to it. We're removing the bad parts, gambling, and introducing new valuable elements, most notably digital ownership. And then we offer that experience through a completely new medium, the metaverse. Many of these parts are not, like, either not possible within the current gaming kind of realms of possibility outside of Web3, or the game studios, publishers, developers are not incentivized to offer some of these experiences. Now, I think like the metaverse piece, I think people cling on to this a little bit. And, you know, I think it's been very helpful for us being a very early adopter of kind of the quote unquote metaverse. We were one of the largest and earlier landholders within Decentraland. And we account for the majority of its traffic today, as I mentioned. But it's what this is not about. And I'll say this in general for metaverse. What this is not about is just some gimmicky kind of 3D experience and eventually some kind of VR experience. Like, cool, yep, that's interesting. But that is a technology layer that presents opportunities for creating new and novel experiences that aren't possible outside of that medium. In the same way that mobile gaming disrupted console and desktop gaming through offering kind of technological abilities, if you like, or unlocks that those other mediums couldn't, Like, you think about just the most simplest things, like, well, we think it's simple today. This is like mind-blowing going back pre-iPhone, but Strava, right? Running apps, health apps, like, they literally are not possible without smartphones and now wearables. And I think, like, metaverse, it's not just about, oh, cool, like, I can go in and see things in 3D. Like, you can do that without the metaverse. Oh, cool, like, maybe there's, like, platforms that come up and offer VR experience. Cool, just go buy an Oculus. You don't need Web3. What this does offer, though, is a whole new layer when it comes to ownership of digital assets, which is one of the building blocks. But I think the future piece on this is interoperability and portability. And we really haven't seen a lot of this just yet. We're seeing it in small pieces, but where within a game experience, you can go and say, okay, I'm going to own these assets within this game. And these assets have utility outside of this game. Now, this may be that, okay, I can take this and they have a whole different kind of unique utility or ability within another game, or it may connect to something in the physical world. Like, maybe this gives you like a physical product that you can now own only if you own some of these like digital assets. Maybe it gives you access into certain like in-person physical events, digital events. Maybe it gives you access to make decisions on the future roadmap of kind of the product and be a true part of the community. And when you look at the majority of like successful modern games, they are all centered around community. Fortnite, World of Warcraft, like League of Legends, Call of Duty, all of these games, right? Like, it's community driven. The way that that community participates is very different in many different layers, but it has that at its heart. And I think what Web3 and Metaverse, like as a subset of that, enables is just a whole new layer of interaction within community. You know, one of the things that I think is that doesn't get talked a lot about in Web3, and when we think about this in the context of gaming disruption long term, I think that hardware is going to play a much bigger part in creating future unlocks here. So we've got like some of the building blocks and software like foundations in place. They're still in their infancy, right? But like, I think, of course, smart contracts, non-fungible tokens have been like one of the building blocks of that. I think there's too much emphasis placed on that technology at the forefront of the game experience right now, which is going to change. But there's also, when you look at, okay, like what created these like major shifts in our kind of game experience over time? You had like regular kind of consoles in the form of, okay, let's like stick to millennial era stuff right now. It's like the original PlayStation, which many people knew and love and was their gateway drug into this. And maybe prior to that, Commodore and things like Dreamcast, Sega Mega Drive, etc., the original NES. And then you had Game Boy, and it was like, whoa.
Loved my Game Gear, by the way.
Oh, yeah. Pokemon Blue basically wasted like the majority of my like time in early years of school, right? But it's like, I say quote-unquote wasted, like it was enriching, you know? And it changed the gaming experience. You went from, wow, okay, not only does this become portable, but wait, I also have this kind of interesting new element where I've got this little cable that I can connect up to someone else's kind of Game Boy, and we can like trade in-game assets, and they create different things. And all of a sudden it was like, whoa, something is happening here, right? And then we saw the introduction of the smartphone, and that changed everything, completely changed everything, because not only did that create a whole new medium, whole new technological unlocks, but it meant that the game was in your pocket. You were online, effectively, always. We've moved into this state, and I think like this is a thing that I've talked a little bit about before. Is like people talk about like what is the metaverse? I think like the metaverse itself is like not to get like too meta here, but you know, I think it's a period of time versus like a technology in itself, right? And you think about, as we've seen technological developments come over time, whether that be through gaming, through mobile devices, through computing, etc., what we've seen in particular since the late 90s through to where we are today is just technology increasing the time that we are consistently online. I think the smartphone in particular has done this to a point where, okay, you would say like, I'm kind of like, it's in my pocket, to the point where, okay, now you have a smartwatch and like everything is consistently being online, to the point where it's not going to become a question of being online and offline. They will become one and the same thing. And VR gets a lot of the discussion around this, but actually I think AR is much more of an important kind of technology in this respect that kind of blends together offline and online. And I think this will just become the norm. And that's when I think kind of this experience of having assets, having ownership, and having interoperability in cross, not just game experience in day-to-day life, it's going to be a huge piece. Now, that's the 5 to 10 year time horizon, right? Like, at least. But the building blocks along the way are going to start creating this, but we need to also have interesting value along the way.
Don't make too many predictions just yet, Matt, will you? Because we do have a prediction part later on in the podcast. But just going back to what you said there, some of my friends might say to me, Tom, why do I need to play and lose all this money in the metaverse? I'm already doing a damn good job of it online or through this app on my phone.
Yeah, I mean, we're all doing a pretty good job of losing money at the moment. But, you know, so I think, as I mentioned, right, Web3 gaming, it's still in its infancy. It is going to get a lot better at onboarding new players. And the thing is, you know, it's not a whole lot different, or at least it shouldn't be, from the kind of current freemium mobile app experiences that consumers know and actually love today. It's just the difference here is that when you spend money within like a game that you love, buying credits, which is like Clash of Clans or it's Candy Crush, like whatever these games are, right? You don't own those things you purchase. And sure, fine, like maybe you don't care that much, right? But you care about owning them in the game. And the problem is like when those games die in popularity and the community fades and like you're left kind of with that, yeah, you've lost money. Maybe you don't care that much about the money, but what you've really lost is the community and the piece of that that you can't take with you. So not only can you with Web3 trade kind of those assets after that, but you can take them, you can take a piece of that community and you can hold that social status, you can hold that standing, you can hold that access, you can hold that reputation or a part of that experience and use those again across like other games and digital experiences, not just gaming. You can even kind of build your own experiences with them. You think about like these little interactions that we take for granted now, like signing into things with your Twitter account. Right. That is an example of this. You don't own that Twitter account. And that's kind of fine for now. Right. I think SocialFi is going to be like another major, major area that's going to grow over the next 2 to 3 years. And we're going to see a lot of big platforms and changes come. I think we're going to see a similar boom that we did in the GameFi space at the end of last year as we will with SocialFi. But it's a whole different discussion. But, you know, this what this does is it creates an enormous kind of layer of additional value on top of just the current gaming experience. Like, there's a lot of talk about, oh, well, like, you know, the Web3 games aren't fun. And yeah, like, you know, many games that are just purely built around the idea of winning tokens, they're not that fun. But, you know, having a fun game is also not enough, right? And just having a fun game plus cool rewards, that's not enough either. Like, there's a reason why so many games don't make it in the regular kind of Web2 world. It's not right now that if you're Web3, you stand a better chance. If anything, you stand a worse chance right now because the onboarding hurdles are so, so high. So I think what we're trying to do here is say, okay, well, we're going to have like parity with these other games, but also we're going to create new layers of value for the gamers from an experience level and also from just like an ownership. And I think when we start to articulate those value propositions a little bit better as a whole space, I think this is going to kind of start to really kind of connect to together in the exact same way that a lot of kind of the freemium mobile game experiences disrupted desktop and consoles.
It says, Matt, that Decentral Games is the first metaverse poker platform where you can complete daily challenges or compete in tournaments to earn rewards and collectibles. Join thousands of players worldwide. That's quite something, isn't it? And how do you keep that fresh and, I guess, engaging given some of the competition?
Number of ways. It's not easy. It's not easy for anyone in the Web3 space, actually, because you're fighting a number of narratives. First is, I don't know if you've heard, but crypto's had some bad press recently.
No way, has it?
So there's that. And it doesn't matter if you are Web3, like the general association to the non-crypto native, like maybe like everyday consumer that doesn't know a whole lot more past maybe they've heard of Bitcoin and ETH and now Sam Bankman-Fried and FTX. What they probably hear is, metaverse equals crypto equals bad, or Web3 equals crypto equals bad, or blockchain gaming equals equals crypto equals bad. So, you know, you're fighting that wave, and that will change over time as the narrative shifts and some parts mature and there's like good success stories that come out. But you're also kind of fighting against, all right, we need to capture people's attention in the Web3 space in what is probably now the deepest of bear markets we've had. I would argue more so now than even 2019, which is a challenge. And then winning over regular gamers to come into Web3, which is, I would say, the toughest of all of those three. And what we've focused our time and energy on is just, you know, I think it's fair to say anyone that has observed us from afar, we ship new features relentlessly. We ship a new major feature to our game on an almost weekly basis. It's unheard of in most kind of sectors, let alone gaming. And, you know, that presents a challenge when it comes to like messaging, education. But our focus is just really on building out sticky, engaging game experience, reducing friction from onboarding, and very importantly, avoiding succumbing to shiny object syndrome. Like, it's very easy to just ride with the next narrative and get a few like wins along the way, but you know, it's actually taking you further and further away from the end goal. So yeah, we've kind of had the blinkers on a little bit and just focus on building right now, which has become, I guess, a bit of a bear market cliche, but it really is what we've been trying to do.
If we picture that gamer sat at home, then we've already seen companies trying to delve into Web3. For example, there's rumors GTA will have some kind of integration with Web3. Can you explain to the listeners how this might happen and entice the said gamer at home who is perhaps already content sitting and playing their PS5 or their Xbox?
I don't know if it's going to come in the way that many people are predicting, but you know, I think this is going to happen in a very similar fashion to the way that desktop and console gamers were enticed into playing mobile games. I remember when the iPhone launched and the App Store came out, and the narrative at the time was that, you know, mobile gaming is going to be an enormous kind of vertical. I mean, I also remember I was working, spending a lot of time working in e-commerce in the early days of my career, and I remember speaking to senior execs, things like that, where they were saying, no one's going to buy a TV on a smartphone. Like, are you crazy? Right? And it was just like, it was just common wisdom that no one will ever do this. People will only buy small, like $10 things. And even then, it's not going to be in volume. Right? And you know, more the fool them. Like, mobile gaming disrupted desktop and console gaming. It didn't end desktop and console gaming. And I don't believe that there is a place for Web3 gaming, and I don't believe that it's going to completely replace the current gaming industry. The current gaming industry is larger than the combined total like global box office right now. I think I was listening to, I think it was in the Economist morning briefing this morning, but something like $170 billion industry right now is the current gaming industry. It's enormous. And I think the way this starts to happen, and we start to see Web3 coming more mainstream, and we convince some of those current diehard gamers to come into and test this stuff out, is they slowly introduce elements into the current gaming experience that will familiarize gamers kind of with the new experience and then offer something above and beyond what other platforms can, right? And I think for Web3, I mentioned this begins with ownership, and then will come kind of the interoperability and portability into other metaverses, game ecosystems, digital experiences. But I think this starts with very, very simple elements. I think Reddit's digital collectible avatars is a great example of this. Tiny, tiny thing. It's been very successful, very well received. They never said the acronym NFT once during all of it. But I think it's just little by little, this starts to happen. And eventually, some of these norms come into place. Gamers get used to kind of these individual elements to eventually kind of go and move fully into Web3 gaming. But it's going to take time. I don't think Web3 is going to the mainstream next year. But I think the total addressable market for Web3 gaming is going to dramatically increase over the next 2 to 3 years.
Can you see a future then, Matt, where I can take, for example, perhaps my play-to-earn gaming tokens and buy McDonald's with them? Probably says more about my lifestyle.
What a time to be alive, eh? all right, okay. So I think the answer to the question is yes, and I think technically you could do it today. Do I think that is what the push will be and what people will actually want to do? No. I think like game tokens are there for use within the game, and while they can be used outside of it, and I think that's also an important part of interoperability, it'll probably be more that like if you actually wanted to use kind of gaming tokens to pay for goods like McDonald's or Nando's, right? Like you could like simply pay with like a crypto.com card that's linked to your crypto accounts, and the conversions all happen in the back end. I actually think like this blending of cryptocurrency and fiat currency on like the back end of just bank accounts, I believe, are going to start supporting and be more crypto native in being able to hold crypto account balances over the next 10 years. I think this will all just kind of blend in and be a part of our financial services setup. At least I think so in Europe. I think the US will be late to adopt some of this because the banking system is just horrendous over there. But I think that's going to start to happen. But I don't think that is the big unlock or even an unlock, to be honest, for gaming.
One thing I'm really intrigued by, Matt, and forgive me if this is a silly question, but it's that idea of in-game items becoming status symbols outside of the game. So, for example, if I earn, for argument's sake, a rare pair of trainers playing Grand Theft Auto, I get it as an NFT, and I can show them off in the sandbox or Decentraland, and even have the right to buy the physical pair if I like. Do you think this scenario is close, and is it something brands should be focusing on?
Yes and yes. You know, I think this happens today without items being NFTs. There's just an unbelievable amount of friction and tech challenges to be able to kind of actually create a great experience for this and deliver like some kind of interoperability outside of this single closed ecosystem. But, you know, I think that the combo of digital and physically paired goods is very interesting. And we're starting to see this happening a lot more. There's a company called Endstate, based out of Boston, actually. And they are basically creating NFT paired sneakers, and they're really cool. They gave you access into different events and a whole other load of different things, but they're completely paired. I joined an interesting project that is called WAGMI United, where there was a DAO that then bought a small English football club called Crawley Town Football Club, which was very interesting. And the way that they fundraised initially was through the sale of like these NFTs, and the NFTs get you access to club merch, like a jersey, and like special experiences within like teams. It's very interesting. I think we're starting to see this kind of like exclusive access piece be a big part. I think this is what's going to be a huge driving force in the music industry and tokenizing access in the music industry, where like the most the largest advocates of a musician or a band are going to be able to get that additional level of access to both goods like merchandise, experiences, communication with their kind of heroes, right? Through the ownership of these like digital kind of collectibles in the form of like NFTs and others. And I think this piece is going to completely change the gaming experiences, along with many other entertainment experiences overall. And it just adds like a whole new level to what a game is. And I think that started when you think about most games pre-broadband, right? There wasn't this kind of online multiplayer experience to it. And when that came, it wasn't just about, oh wow, now I can like play this game on a different scale. It was, now I can actually develop a social interaction. They became social networks, right? And they added this whole new level of experience. I think that's what Web3 is going to do on top of that to elevate it even more.
Your blog, Matt, on your own personal webpage is interesting. I'd encourage anybody who is listening to go and check that out. But in your most recent post, or one of your posts, certainly towards the latter end of 2022, you stated that crypto has a cult problem. What do you mean exactly by that?
Well, I think when, and this happened in the 2017 cycle on a slightly smaller scale, and has really took on whole new levels of risk, and what a lot of 2022 has ultimately, has been the downfall of this year, has been the fact that, you know, individual populism, like what we're seeing over the past 5 years in Western politics, is rife. It's toxic and has become kind of the root of many problems in the crypto space. And I think not only that, we seem to be stuck in some kind of Stockholm syndrome, where the villains of the past year come back to be the heroes of the next year, and then ultimately repeat their history. And I think it's really important that we break this cycle. There's too many individuals that very, very quickly can build enormous influence. And that influence, which, you know, that level of influence exists in many other industries. The difference within the crypto space is they don't have the ability to move markets in the same way that can be in crypto. Maybe outside of probably Elon Musk, right? And, you know, this is very, very problematic, because incentives are not aligned very well. And as we've seen, it turns out that most of these people that we've kind of idolized and put on those pedestals are very, very quick to deceive and, in fact, act in not only a selfish manner, but a very, very disruptive manner to progressing the space as a whole. I think more accountability on individuals is needed. And as I mentioned earlier, you know, I think more regulation is too.
You have your own podcast as well, Matt. What's that about? Who's the audience, and how do I get on it?
I've been running a podcast since 2017. It's called the Decrypting Crypto Podcast. Started out really focusing on just the fundamentals of understanding the tech behind it. We do some like in-depth interview episodes with people building the kind of products and protocols, services that are moving the Web3 space forward, the crypto space as a whole, and really doing a deep dive into that. Alongside that, we do a weekly kind of news briefing, if you like, called Off-Chain. So yeah, if you're interested in some of that stuff, I would recommend anyone. We're on all the podcasting platforms, so just check out the Decrypting Crypto podcast.
Well, Matt, we like to end, as I mentioned earlier, with a prediction question, only so we can get you back on to point out what you might have got right or wrong. So here's yours. Do buckle in. Where is gaming going from here, and what might we see in 2023? Will there be a mainstream breakthrough? And if so, how?
2023 is going to be about building. I don't believe we're going to see mainstream breakthroughs. I think when we look at the wider macro environment, right? Okay, we're starting to see signs, certainly in the US, that inflation is starting to slow. Depending on how you look at the recent numbers in the Eurozone, inflation has probably just about flattened. I think what we're starting to see is that central banks around the world, in particular, the ECB and the Fed, are going to probably increase interest rates at a slightly reduced pace, maybe by 50 basis points, which is already kind of priced into the markets right now. The goal is to bring interest rates down closer, probably to the 4% mark, which would be an amazing, bring inflation down to kind of that 4% mark. And I think that is going to be an enormous kind of challenge in itself. And I think we're going to start to see things get a little bit better, but it's still going to be painful. I think 2024, 2025 is when we're going to start to see like a true recovery, and because we're still going to be going through major recessions alongside all of the interest rates kind of cooling off. So with all of that in mind, right, still going to be a challenging space to building. We're still also finding out, you know, what are the right models for attracting Web3 natives into the gaming space, let alone bringing in like the mainstream. And I think for now, everything is going to and must focus on the onboarding experience. Games are going to start also caring a lot more about owning the whole wallet stack. I think this is going to be a talking point in 2023, and removing kind of a lot of that like technical jargon from the games. I don't think we're going to be talking so much about NFTs and tokens specifically within games in the way that we do today, in the same way that we don't talk about the fact that a game is an app and it's on a mobile device, and that's a huge USP. Like that, you know, it just needs to blur into the background. I think obscuring the wallet from the experience is going to be important for mainstream adoption, and moving away, of course, in the gaming space from this like endless cycle of inflation of rewards, which I think we're already moving away from that now anyway. The projects, the teams, the companies, the games, the studios that deliver here, they're going to be the big winners in 2024. And this is in part about, you know, what was important this year was that you raised enough capital to survive and get through to the middle of next year and have enough to kind of weather out the rest of 2023 so that in 2024, you're in a position where you can really start to see accelerated growth. And I think that's when we're going to begin seeing another wave of adoption in Web3 gaming. I'm not going to say it's going to be like mainstream breakthrough at that point, but I think that, as I mentioned earlier, the addressable market's going to significantly increase.
And Matt, before we let you go, can you direct people, if they want a further chat with you, to your website, perhaps your social platforms, all that good stuff?
Yeah, just Google Decentral Games. You'll be able to come through. The website is decentral.games. If you want to check out me on Twitter, go at Matthew Barbie, or you can check out my website, which is mhb.xyz. And I'll be happy to kind of chat to anyone on, usually on Twitter is a good space, and obviously check out the Decrypting Crypto podcast as well. But it's been a pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
And the same to you, Matt. Great to have you on. Thank you very much indeed. So there we have it, episode 2 of You, Me and Web3. Do keep an eye out for our next You, Me and Web3 shorts. That will drop next Thursday. And as a little tease, it's one for the football gamers.